Good morning and welcome to Stock Market Strategies on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. I'm Ed Handley, Certified Financial Planner, Senior Vice President, Investments, Fulcrum Securities, LLC, and Portfolio Manager. Fulcrum Securities is a member of FINRA, SIPC, clearing through Pershing, LLC, a subsidiary Bank of New York Mellon, member of the New York Stock Exchange. This program will focus on strategies for the financial markets with an emphasis on technical analysis and macroeconomics. Programs are streamed to www.federalnewsradio.com. Just click on Listen, select your format. The programs are also archived. All you have to do is click on Shows, scroll down a little bit to the right, Weekend. My banner will pop up, Stock Market Strategies. I manage money for institution retail accounts using combinations of stocks, bonds, ETFs, mortgage pools, currency, structured products, longs, and shorts. Almost any hedge that I can get. Top-down analysis and a tactical, not strategic allocation. Also run the Fulcrum Fee Program, and you may contact me by sending me an email at edh@fulcrumsecurities.com. Telephone numbers during business hours, not today, please, 866-689-4001. I also do podcasts twice a week, and those programs are archived on www.edhandley.com. Please remember the opinions and views expressed during the broadcast this morning are not to be considered specific recommendations. Individual investors' decision should only be made after considering one's own circumstances, including tolerance or risk. Investors should consider including fundamental, quantitative, and technical analysis before making final investment decisions. Caveat emptor. Theme for today, times are changing. There are a multitude of macroeconomic factors in play, which will drive the outcomes of the market. This is probably uncharted territory, something that is not documented or has been done on such a global scale in the past. It is prone to errors, and therein lies your opportunity. But you have to recognize those. You have to be a very keen student of the markets to gather the most from what is being presented to you. We have quite a little battle going on with the currency wars and the debt debacles that we continue to face every month. So far, January has been an amazing month, one of the best in a very, very long time. But this too shall end, and you have to recognize what those signs are in order to prepare for that and then adjust accordingly. I would remind you that when we started this great advance from March of 2009, there was blood in the street and everyone hated the market. And it is basically more than doubled over the period of time. We are now approaching 4 years, which is a little long in the tooth for any cyclical or cyclical run. The previous run that we had from 2002 to 2007 lasted 60 months. It was the second longest duration ever. You're now pushing 47, 48 months before this one. So that is a forewarning. Plus, the game is dramatically different. This is what we'll try to do in this little segment this morning and in future segments, try to help you through those hurdles so that you can ascertain what's important, what's not important, and what you're really being said. Do not be caught unaware. It is much more difficult now than it was a year ago. In recent weeks and months, we've had two of the world's most powerful institutions, the United States government. We are the world's largest borrower, of course. And the Chinese government, second largest in GDP by nation, of course, the world's largest lender. Both of those entities have sent very important messages to market participants. They will have broad implications for investors in 2013 and beyond. We have had an introduction of the zero interest rate policy and quantitative easing. Where are we now? QE3, QE4, QE infinity? Yes, we will stop it. No, we won't. No one knows for sure. That'll be reflected in bond market pricing, plus the tremendous amounts of cash that is being generated to fuel the market. As long as the 30-year bond U.S. Treasury hangs around 3.0 and the 10-year around 0.9, we're in okay shape. But if you go to a norm on the 10-year, which is 4+, you have to remember that the U.S. obligation of interest on its debt would probably more than double. All the while, we're racking up huge, huge deficit spendings and the market marches on. So the broad implications of those actions will certainly reflect upon the market. The Federal Reserve has made it perfectly clear that its policies are designed to favor the borrowers, be it government, corporations, or individuals. The individuals, they are obviously the item of probably the largest accumulation of wealth, and the most important to them is home ownership. And you can see how the policies has impacted that as home prices continue to rise. They do this by devaluating the massive amounts of debt outstanding while attempting to inflate asset values. So you not only have the home asset, which is inflating, you have to ask yourself, are the commodity bases that far behind? The commodity really hasn't participated very much over the last year in this market, but with the tremendous amounts of capitals being created, you have to ask yourself, how long will it be before they do? Now, these same policies are very much negatively impacting the lenders, the bondholders. You have noticed over the last several weeks that you're starting to see a rotation from the individual investor from holding bonds in the form of their mutual funds into rolling into equities. As with most individual investors, the warning sign that is sounded as be really, really careful when they make a turn, because it's usually at the end of the move. We shall see. They are the herd. One way to assure mediocre returns in the market is be a part of the herd. But we'll see how it unfolds. Now, the impact of the Fed policy is certainly not lost on China or the Chinese, nor should it be to the investors. Specifically, China needs to increase its ownership of 9 Chinese corporations by diversifying out of the fixed income investments. I guess by best guess right now, the Chinese hold about $3 trillion in reserves. Obviously, the yield on that money is going to continue to be low for quite some time. Collectively, the U.S. and China represents about a third of the global GDP. The policies implemented and investment made by those two nations dramatically affect the rest of the world. A little bit on U.S. debt and deficits. OMB report shows that as long as we're running $1 trillion deficits, the statutory debt limit, also known as the debt ceiling, will need to be raised by $1 trillion annually. That appears that it has setting up the potential for a fight in Congress on a continuing basis. The latest is they're going to kick the can down the street until May and then address the problem. Maybe they'll address it then, maybe they won't. We shall see. But in any case, you can pretty much be assured you're going to have between $1 and $1.25 trillion deficit every year as far as the eye can see. So where will we be, say, 2 years from now? You'll be pushing $20 trillion. Call it 19.5 to 20. As a matter of fact, we can take a look at some of the key economic figures from 2002, 2012, and 2015. 2002, U.S. GDP was around $10.5 trillion. 2012, $15.5. By 2015, you'll be looking at $18.5. You get the idea? If we can increase the debt at a lower rate than when we increase the GDP, then we have solved the problem. But the problem is, you may not be able to increase the GDP at that rate. surplus deficit we're running, deficits in 2012, 2002, 2012, the deficit difference will be an order of magnitude as compared to 2012. Now, they believe that in 2015, they can cut that deficit spending from $1 trillion down to about $600 or $700 billion per year. But what if the interest rates rise? Then these numbers are absolutely worthless. 2012, the interest rate cost is $170 billion. 2002, 2012, $225 billion. By 2015, we're estimating the interest rate cost will be around $400 billion. 10-year Treasury yields 2002, 4.6. 2012, 1.7. 2015, they're estimating 4.4 on the 10-year Treasury. So you've got about 2 years, according to this out of OMB, before the yield on the 10-year goes from 1.8, 1.9, 1.7 to north of 4. So when will they start unloading the treasuries? It should be soon, should it not? We shall see. All the while, we know that the Chinese are going to digress from the tremendous amounts of Federal Reserve they're holding, and they will do that to try to buy commodities, things, companies, anything but a fixed debt holding. So the pressure is on the fixed income market, and you have to be very keenly attuned to how it is transpiring. So the question facing investors and traders is whether governments and central banks with their fiscal policies, market interventions, zip rate manipulations, quantitative easing, debt repurchasing, etc., have mitigated the system stressed and truncated the end of this long deflationary cycle. The liquidity, hopefully, is more than temporary. Holding insolvency at bay is still in the cards. Generally, when you get out of one of these deflationary cycles, what you have to do is to get rid of the weak, let them declare the bankruptcy, and have new growth in new industries that get you the next great spurt. This has been going on for hundreds of years. Right now, there is an impetus to try to change that. It may or may not be successful. I'll take the bet that it will not, because it would violate the patterns of all the past. We shall see. Debt and deleveraging is the primary driver of the great cycle of human action. Here at the start of 2013, central banks have gone all in. Read about the Japanese. Holding nothing back in their acquisition of debt, which basically, when you look at it, you have to think that, you know, that rewards mistakes, punishes prudence. And that's what we have. So things have dramatically changed. 2013 should be a very wild ride. And the fiscal cliff that we will appear to be going over will appear and reappear periodically for the remainder of the year. But the question is, will the effects fade faster than the problem grows? The answer is, we don't know, but we're certainly going to find out. So we got a new playbook for the central bankers. They'll consider more radical measure, commitments to keep interest rates on hold for extended periods, numerical targets for unemployed, which will consistently be higher than what you can imagine. Rates are near zero, and further stimulus may be in the works. We shall see. And it's going on throughout the world, U.S., China, Japan, and Europe. So what is the global impact of all of this? Foreign reserves of $3 trillion for the Chinese. They're not going to sit back and watch the assets depreciate with every round of quantitative easing infinity. They have to inject into the real economy, make their contributions to global prosperity. An increase in overseas investment by Chinese companies is an inevitable trend. I didn't make that up. That is a quote from the Minister of Commerce of China. Whoa. Recent examples, China Investment Corporation's at CIC acquisition of 10% stake in the company that owned London's Heathrow Airport. It was established in 2007 to invest in some of China's foreign reserve. The largest overseas acquisition that I'm knowledgeable of to date, CNOOC, the Chinese National Offshore Oil Corporation, CNOOC, has received approval from Canada to acquire Nexen, and that's a Canadian oil and gas company, $15 billion. PetroChina has purchased a stake in the Browse Liquefied Natural Gas Project in Australia for $1.7 billion. This is going to be a really interesting space. Natural gas, if anything, is a local market. $3.50 million BTUs in the U.S., and in Korea and Japan, it can get to $16, $18 per million BTU. And now we know why manufacturing is coming back to the United States, because the cost of the energy offsets the cost of labor. And hence, net-net, it is more efficient, both in terms of production and distribution, in many cases, to bring some of these things back to the U.S. for construction. So I'm really looking for a rebirth of manufacturing in the United States. The world's second largest economy, China, is one of the more important contributors to global GDP, estimated to be between about $450 and $550 billion. We still dwarf that at $16 trillion GDP. So you can get an implication. But they are an important factor. So maybe we get a sea change for U.S. industry and corporate America. Energy is obviously a main important factor in the revitalization of the industrialization of the U.S. You also have select media and technology companies. Internet traffic continues to swell, expected to grow by a factor of 4 in 4 years. Huge. Mobility, cloud computing, machine-generated information, internet video are some of the main drivers of the use. Data center companies and owners of wireless spectrum will be key beneficiaries of business consumers' demand access to data anytime, anywhere, on demand. So there's tremendous opportunities in the media energy, space industry. High-quality content will benefit from an expanding customer base that can be serviced at incremental cost, positioning them to benefit from the disruptive area in video distribution that's occurring. Energy strategic resource opportunities. We know the Chinese are going here. They're still an export economy. They have to do it more efficiently, and they have to be based worldwide and to service all customers, but yet on a lower, probably a smaller amount than they've done in the past. And they'll blend that with domestic production and domestic consumption and blend the two together to keep their manufacturing and industrialization on pace. So, energy cost. They're going to pay more for energy. Whoever has the cheapest energy is going to have a significant advantage. The United States is the BTU capital of the world. It's estimated that we will soon produce more oil per day, per month, per year than Saudi Arabia. It's just a short time away. Equities in this particular sector have rebounded. If you want to take an interesting look at a very interesting chart, look at the XLE on a monthly or annual quarterly basis. This is an energy ETF. It is a phenomenal looking pattern. All we have to do is wait for the breakout to higher levels, providing the world keeps producing its GDP and is not drowned in debt. So many of the factors that are occurring are coming together for a move to the upside. Energy company valuations are probably the lowest level we've seen in a decade when measured by valuations of cash flow reserves. Many are trading at less than 4x cash flow from operations. These companies are well positioned to benefit from a cyclical recovery in the U.S. and developing world, as well as growing secular demand for energy in the developing world and expected increased U.S. reliance on natural gas in the coming decade, which is cheap beyond comparison compared to oil. These valuations make mid-sized exploration production companies appealing acquisition candidates to strategic buyers. Some companies have shifted the emphasis of their capital deployment from long-term growth projects to a balance of growth and return of free cash flow. Others, since we are so abundant in natural gas, are making a switch to more oil liquids commodities. Chesapeake Energy is one that comes in mind. Financials are dramatically improving, but banks are like all banks. They keep doing very well until they blow themselves up. They always have, and they probably always will. The concept of greed overcomes their good logic. They will continue to do that. Then we have the beneficiaries of currency devaluations. Now the Japanese have rolled into this space, and they are going to be a major player. We're looking at $85 billion a month from quantitative easing infinity with our combined program. The Japanese are talking about $125 billion a month beginning in January of 2014 in order to get 2% inflation. They've been battling this for a long time. They topped out in 1989 and have yet to recover to the Nikkei 39,000. As they keep deflating and keep deflating. Once you get into a deflationary cycle, as the Japanese are finding out, it is unbelievable to try to dig your way out. And they keep printing money. So the solution to the problem appears to be, we got into this and we're going to continue to print money until we get out. That's the Japanese, the U.S., and Europe. So they now become the leader in devaluing their currency. That puts us into second place. And then third, we have the euro. So of the three, you got to say to yourself, I don't think the Europeans are spending, deficit spending, at the rate that we are or at the rate the Japanese will be. So the yen should fall. The dollar will be okay, maybe static, maybe increase a little bit. But the euro should rise against all two, the other two. There's one more ingredient, the store of value. Where is that? Gold has tended to be a standout performer during such times. There's no reason to believe that it will not again. There is also, if you're able to create the inflation, the added benefit is that the commodity-priced metals, both precious metals and industrial metals, should tend to rise. So there's another space that looks good. Let's do a little update on the Treasury market in the time we have remaining. 20-year sector, U.S. Treasury bond, 20-year sector appears to be forming a top since early June. That's the bond. The yield is inverse, of course. If we look at this, it shows us a bottoming pattern back to June with near-term support close to early September yields. Upside resistance around the mid-September yield. This pattern is starting to indicate that you should expect a higher interest rate. Even the OMB has told you that you may be looking for north of 4% perhaps in by 2015. So these are interesting things that are all blending together. Okay, now climate change, which was addressed in the inaugural speech by President Obama. Climate change, debt ceiling, which really wasn't expressed. It appears that President Obama once again stressed the need for an aggressive agenda to combat climate change. My opinion, it won't come from Congress with Republicans in charge of the House. But this is a strong reason to expect an aggressive regulatory agenda, since they can't get it done through Congress. So you do it with a regulatory agenda in this term. That is going to drive up the price of energy, no doubt. Bank of Japan, as I've mentioned a couple of times already, likely to further expand monetary easing, continue to wait on the yen. Purchases this year, and then the big one, the 125 to 135 billion a month starting in 2014, which they hope to get a 2% inflation rate. 2% inflation rate. Wow. So far this year, Washington in January seems okay. We've had tax hikes, budget negotiations overhang. Weekly data looks okay. Company surveys are basically unchanged. Unemployment rate, 359,000. Downside breakouts, well below its average of 377. Side note, there is a phenomenal correlation between unemployment and the S&P. Inverse relationship for unemployment. As the unemployment claims drop and you plot it out, you can overlay it with the S&P. My back of the envelope guess is the correlation is in the 85% range. It's huge. So when you get unemployment current claims breaking 375 to the downside, 350 to the downside, 3.25, it will help, at least it is a factor in propelling the market higher. The other side of that coin is jobs. How many jobs are you creating? The big round number is 200,000. When you get 200,000 a month and you can sustain that, you will see move, at least it will be a factor, a major factor in driving the market to higher values. That's some of the things that you want to look at. Some of the things that you want to be concerned with. So, 0.85 correlation on the jobs. Nominal GDP, looking for 16 trillion. GDP in the third quarter increased to 5.8% quarter over quarter annual rate, the fastest in 5 years. Real GDP was about 3.1. Now, that speaks to GDP in this quarter coming up. That's going to be released in a couple of weeks. I am not expecting a robust GDP number. I'm expecting something in the neighborhood of 1.5% down from 3%. And I think the market will react negatively to that. But it's an aberration because of certain factors that occurred during the quarter, which I don't have time to go into. If you see that, watch the market closely. If it does not break key support levels, it should be the dip that you may be looking for. I'm out of time. Hope you're having a good day. Please remember the opinions and views expressed during the broadcast are not to be considered specific recommendations. Individual investors' decisions should only be made of considering one's own circumstances, including tolerance for risk. Investors should consider including fundamental, quantitative, and technical analysis before making final investment decisions. Hope you're going to have a good day, a good weekend. Be back with you next week on Stock Market Strategies. I'm Ed Handley, and you may reach me through www.edhandley.com. Thank you very much.